we're going to talk about prejudice and discrimination based on skin tone during this hour, and why darker-skinned people of color are perceived differently and treated differently than lighter-skinned people of color. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to talk with a guest sociologist who is the author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. And we will welcome your thoughts and your questions about colorism. Has colorism ever affected you or a loved one? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Jeffrey Ann Wilder, a sociologist and scholar specializing in diversity, race relations, and gender issues. She is also an associate professor of sociology at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville. She is also the founding director of the Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnic Relations. And she is the author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. Thank you so much for being with us. Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't have your microphone on. Now I do. Professor Wilder, good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. So what is the definition of colorism?
Colorism is the discrimination or differential treatment based upon the lightness and darkness of your skin tone. So I think everyone has a really good understanding of racism, where people are treated differently based upon their racial category. Colorism is exactly the same. The only difference is that the prejudice and discrimination is actually determined by how light or how dark one's skin complexion is.
And is this discrimination within the community of color?
Yes, so it happens typically within communities of color. I am careful to point out, and just to get people to recognize, that colorism happens from non-people of color as well. But typically, when we see colorism manifesting itself, it's lighter-skinned people of color discriminating against their darker-skinned counterparts, and vice versa.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about why do so few people know about this issue?
Well, I think plenty of communities of color know about the issue. It's been an issue that has been around for centuries. I think just recently, non-people of color are becoming more aware and cognizant of this issue. Unfortunately, because of the broader struggle for racial justice within our society, typically people of color, and particularly African Americans, have really spent a lot of time lobbying for and fighting for equal rights and equity as it relates to racial discrimination. So colorism is typically not discussed within broader communities and within, you know, sort of outside the race, but it's something that has been around just as long as colorism has been around, just as long as racism has been around in our society.
Yeah, and clarify for us again the difference between colorism and racism.
Racism is the discrimination or differential or preferential treatment of people based upon their racial category. So in the U.S., you know, so we think of people in racial categories, Black or African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, Asian Americans, White Americans. And so I think we understand that historically White Americans as a group have received in many ways preferential treatment compared to other racial minorities. Colorism is about people being discriminated against based upon the lightness or darkness of their skin tone, and that happens within communities of color. So within the African-American community, African-Americans tend to discriminate against each other based upon lighter or darker skin. Typically, lighter skin is viewed as the standard or where people gets more value. So lighter skin Black people tend to get preferential treatment within the group and also outside the group compared to their darker skin counterparts.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about the preferential treatment. What does that mean exactly?
Well, so it takes on a wide variety of sort of dimensions. So in my book, I talk about, I look specifically at the experiences of colorism with black women, and particularly younger black women. And so this can take place in families. So families showing or socializing African-American children to place a value on lighter skin or devalue darker skin. This also extends to hair and also various facial features as well. This takes place within the media context. So if we think about broader mainstream media, typically, African-Americans, particularly women who get elevated or get the most, who are the most popular, tend toward lighter skin tones. This also takes place within music. This takes place within relationships. So people within relationships who date within their race tend to think that lighter skinned women are the more ideal mates. And there's also a really interesting significant amount of social science research that shows that lighter skinned African-Americans tend to do better economically, educationally, and even health-wise compared to their darker-skinned counterparts. So this is more than just about beauty and levels of attractiveness. This has widespread implications in the same way that we think about and understand race, racism having widespread implications on people of color.
Yeah. So is this something that affects black women primarily, or is it men as well?
That impacts the entire African-American community. So again, in thinking about research that, you know, social science research over the past 2-3 decades showing that lighter-skinned blacks tend to fare better in the job market or when it comes to educational attainment. But we do know that because of our standards of beauty, that there are certain ways that women are impacted more by this.
Yeah.
So thinking about what we consider to be beautiful in American society, black women then have this added layer to sort of think about and surmount in their everyday lives, lived experiences.
So where did this come from?
This started in slavery. I also want to point out that colorism is a global phenomenon. Many societies who have a history of colonization have issues with color. So from nations including India, Thailand, Philippines, large number of nations in Latin America and Brazil, or excuse me, Latin America and the Caribbean also have issues with skin tones, so preferencing lighter skin over darker skin tones. Within the United States, though, this began during slavery. So the separation of slaves, once there began racial mixing within the United States, the separation of slaves or separation of slaves who had mixed ancestry sort of impacted how slaves were able to do their jobs. So looking at how the division of labor was sort of separated out based upon how light or dark slaves were. So the separation of lighter-skinned slaves versus their darker-skinned counterparts, once slavery ended, we see that lighter-skinned blacks who are afforded more opportunities in acquiring an education, which, of course, is the pathway to, for a lot of folks, middle-class status. And so that's something that started during slavery and then over time has evolved and continues to be an issue and a social problem, I would argue, within the African-American community.
So to be blunt, we're favoring the lighter skin tone because we think there's a biracial aspect here and we favor white over black?
Well, of course we do.
Mm-hmm.
So within our society, we've seen that, right? And it's not necessarily favoring a biracial aspect of that, because there are plenty of African Americans. I mean, we all have, if we were all, you know, kind of to go back and look at our ancestry, we are all in some way, shape, or form, you know, biracial or multiracial. So thinking about the variation of skin tones that operate within the African American community, we know that African Americans, just like other folks of color, were not all the same skin tone. There's a wide variety of ranges there. So given the varying shades of brown that black people sort of come in, so to speak, the closer you are to white, the lighter you are, right? So we know black people can't be white, but the lighter your skin is, the closer you are to white, the more preferred you are, because we live in a society that tends toward, historically, having a bias toward whiteness. And so it's just a manifestation of racism and how that gets sort of internalized, if you will, within the black community.
Your book is Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. I'm wondering if you have your own color story.
Oh, I absolutely do, and actually talk about that in my book. So I've been researching and really interested in colorism for almost 20 years. And part of what was so fascinating to me is that as I was growing up, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and when I was growing up, in my family, there are four of us siblings, and I would fall, my skin tone falls in the middle. You know, I don't have extreme light skin, I don't have extreme dark skin, I'm sort of in the middle. And people recognize that within black communities. They recognize, and there is some consensus about where folks' skin tone falls. My older sister is very light. We would call her yellow. Mm. Very, very light skin. And my two brothers, are darker skinned. And so as a way to kind of make sure there was no difference or any type of preferential treatment in my family, my parents were really, thoughtful in not making a difference. So I didn't really understand that until I got older and got older in high school and college, seeing that there was a difference and sort of becoming very curious about why people place such an emphasis on the differences in skin tone. And so, when I got in college, I did more research on it and decided that this would be an area of research for me that has sort of continued on for almost 20 years now. So my color story starts not of experiencing any type of preferential treatment or any differential treatment, but not having a color story, if you will, and really wondering and wanting to know more about why my counterparts in the black community, particularly other women, had such stories of pain and rejection and exclusion and marginalization, whether they were light-skinned or dark-skinned, and really wanted to find out more about why that's the case. And then I also wanted to know, why is it that younger black women today, I mean, we are the benefactors of civil rights legislation, so why is it that people of color today still struggle with their skin tone?
Well, we'll talk more about that as we go along. We are talking with Jeffrey Ann Wilder. She's a sociologist and scholar. She is an associate professor of sociology at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, the founding director of the Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnic Relations, and the author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. Do you have a story about colorism to share or a question? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Jeffrey Ann Wilder, author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century, talking about what colorism is and why it is and why it matters, and welcoming your questions and your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our lines are full, so let's go to the phones. Jade in Plover is with us. Hello, Jade. Yes, Jade, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to offer insight about my personal experience and not belonging to either shade it offers and the healing that I got.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Could you be as brief as possible and speak directly into your phone?
Okay, how's that? Is that better?
That's much better, yes, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to offer some insight as to my experience as being Filipino and Polish. Growing up as a child, I was never dark enough or white enough, and I never fit into either culture. And I found a lot of this had started with my Filipino grandmother, who got a lot of racism in her life for being too dark in the Filipino culture. She influenced her children to marry as many American GIs as possible. And I, being the first grandchild that was American enough, as she said, I never really had a place in her family.
And Professor Wilder, this is, you mentioned this is a global issue.
Absolutely. And so, and a lot of times, you know, the messages that the callers, you know, family talked about, you know, trying to marry someone outside the race in order to make sure that the offsprings are, you know, have a better chance of looking, of not looking Filipino, and in the case of African Americans, not looking black. I think that's really, really common. And so there are some shared sort of experiences and lots of parallels that we see within a lot of nations, a lot of cultures that really ultimately privilege and value lighter skin, and also, and beyond that, privilege whiteness and value that. And so a way, a means to whiteness, if you will, for a lot of people is through intermarriage. And then also this notion of, you know, if you marry someone outside the race, or even if within the race, if you marry someone lighter, then your children will come out lighter. At least that's what people think, right? Your children will come out lighter and then not have to experience as much discrimination, you know, as, you know, previous folks within the family. So it's a really prevalent issue, and I think it impacts lots of people. The thing is that we don't talk about it enough. It's essentially a secret. It's a tightly well-kept secret within lots of communities of color because, again, the broader issue for many communities of color is dismantling racism.
Yeah. You know, thank you, Jade, for the call. It reminds me that Michael Jackson used to bleach his skin. He said he had a condition that made it happen, but it was believed that he bleached his skin to make it whiter. Was he manifesting colorism?
Well, you know, I wish Michael Jackson were here so we could ask mm-hmm. him, you know, personally. But I think, you know, Michael Jackson was impacted by vitiligo, which makes your skin lighter. And I think, given what I know about his particular sort of case, is that he bleached his skin so he wouldn't appear to have differing skin tones. I think we can also point to other folks who have admitted to bleaching their skin so it could be lighter. So, for instance, Sammy Sosa, who is Dominican, you know, former baseball player, his skin tone was dark, and he openly admitted to bleaching his skin to make it lighter because he didn't feel good about the messages he received with darker skin. The bleaching industry is, you know, a very, very profitable industry in the U.S. and also abroad, because many women feel that in order to be accepted, in order to be valued, they need to make their skin lighter. So while we don't necessarily know about Michael Jackson, yeah. we do know that other people go to great lengths to do some very damaging things to their skin in order to be thought of as better. And that's unfortunate, because what the message is that lighter is better, but of course that means that darker is bad and not as valued.
And then we have Caucasians. I'm among them. I tan because I think I look better. What's going on there?
Yeah, so a lot of people bring that up within the context of colorism, and while we do see that, I think the biggest difference is that, you know, there is not a message that white society or white individuals receive that in order to be better, they need to make their skin darker. And I would argue that people aren't going into tanning salons to make their skin darker so they can have a better chance of getting a job or have a better chance of getting a mate. So there really isn't a whole lot of research that supports that. The reasons why people tan are really more aesthetic, right? So we know that pale, extremely pale white skin is not valued either. Nonetheless, you know, white skin is still valued. So the reasons for people tanning are not analogous to the reasons people offer for bleaching their skin. So people of color are bleaching their skin so they can be looked upon as more valuable and have a better quality of life, while people who decide to go into tanning salons aren't doing so they can increase their currency and improve the chances of their overall quality of life. And that's a really big difference there.
Dave in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, well, I live. We have a pool that's only just for summer swimming. But one of the kids there, when he was really young, he used to always go swimming. And when he came about 12, he stopped swimming. He wouldn't wear shorts. But I go, why won't you go swimming anymore? He said, well, because it makes me darker. And I thought, God, at the age of 12, he decided, it's better for me to be lighter. And I thought, well, that's crazy. I felt so bad that he felt he had to do that.
Dave, this 12-year-old was a Caucasian.
No, he was black. He was a black young. He was a black young man, well, child at the time. And when he got to about age 12, he stopped going into the pool swimming. And I said, "Well, why are you doing that?" He said, "Because they get darker."
Oh boy! So reaction to that, Professor Wilder?
Very common. Again, so this is the thing about colorism that, folks within the African-American community have really managed to keep this, for lack of a better word, a close-knit family secret. Don't play in the sun is a very common message that African-Americans hear growing up, and also messages that African-Americans give to their children. So staying out of the sun as to avoid getting darker. People who aren't folks of color probably don't think about the ability of people of color to get dark if they're in the sun. So all of us get darker if we have exposure to the sun. And for black folks, getting out in the sun and getting darker is not typically a good thing. So it is very common for mothers and people and families and other folks to sort of warn their children and caution them about getting too dark or staying out in the sun too long as to make their skin tone darker. That's a very common message that people hear. And again, it's not limited to the African-American community. It's something that, people hear in communities of color around the world. So the message then is preserving your skin tone, not getting any darker. The darker you are, the worse it is.
We are talking about colorism, discrimination, or prejudice based on skin tone, with our guest, Jerry Ann Wilder, who is the author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. George in Madison is with us now. Hi, George.
Good morning, Joy, and what an interesting topic. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
My family dynamics are similar to yours. I am a dark-skinned African-American male. My sister is extremely light-skinned, and I have a brother that's a little younger than me that's kind of like in the middle. And we were all treated differently in school. We had somewhat the same teachers, but the interactions that the teachers had with each of us were completely different. My sister was encouraged to pursue her academic dreams. I was, on the other hand, encouraged to pursue more menial things in life. And this happened with white teachers and black teachers. And I've talked to individuals in my own age group, friends, and the same thing happened to them, too. So I'd like to hear your comment on that. And also your comment, I would like for you to comment on how the 1950s and 60s with the whole James Brown thing, I'm black and I'm proud, how that came to kind of change the dynamic of colorization. I mean, it still happens today, but it kind of made people aware that being dark-skinned was a good thing. Mm-hmm. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Thank you so much for your comments. And so I'll just the first point you raised about people making differences, whether they were white or black, in children based upon what they sort of place their capabilities of. And we see lots of research on that where, in my book, I talk about how teachers, family members, all kinds of people, either consciously or subconsciously, project certain things, life capabilities, if you will, on people based upon the lightness and darkness of skin. And there's lots of stories in my book about women who at opposite ends of the spectrum. So really quickly, one woman who is very dark-skinned identifies herself and describes her skin tone as very dark, talks about how in her family no one expected her to go to college, no one expected her to do anything or be anything, where she readily saw a very different kind of message given to her other family members who were lighter-skinned. On the flip side of that, there are stories, women in my book who are very, very light-skinned, and they talk about how they were expected to do great things, and that created a unfair burden on them within their family. Even things like, well, you know, we expect you to get an education, and you can use your light skin as currency to bring our family out of poverty. So this is really powerful stuff that people are still receiving today. And so the caller brings up a really important point. So notions and messages of skin tone have definitely changed and shifted and evolved over time. And during the 60s and 70s, if you will, during the Civil Rights Movement, there, of course, was this shift in sort of a cultural ideological standpoint for Black Americans. So this Black is Beautiful movement, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, sort of ushers in this sort of positive valuation and embracing Black people of all skin tones. And so it was a time where Black people sort of said that it's okay, regardless of your light skin or dark skin, we're going to love all Black, all shades of Black, and all shades are beautiful. And this is really kind of the starting point for my research, because given that, a lot of people at the time thought, well, this is great, right? So people are starting to love the skin that they're in a lot more. So that means that this notion of colorism must be on its way out, that it's going to be a thing of the past. And as someone who is a colorism scholar in the 21st century, that becomes my starting point for my research. Given where people sort of thought ideas about color and also race would be, why aren't we any further along? Again, it's a parallel conversation that we're having about race, given where we are as a society, given all the things that have happened during the Civil Rights Movement, why aren't we further along? So that conversation about color can get placed just alongside the same conversations that we're having about race.
Yeah. So why aren't we further along?
Well, we're not further along because different things have happened over time that kind of reinsert the same messages that lighter is better. So different things have happened, even, you know, of course, within our society over the past couple of years, that kind of remind us, give us very sobering reminders that race still matters, that race is still, a thing that does impact people's quality of life. And we are also getting those same kinds of messages in spite of seeing various women of color in positions of power and being elevated as beautiful women, that we still nonetheless get these messages that lighter is better, lighter is preferred, and that lighter is at the moment thought of as better within our society.
Can you give us some, I don't know, maybe since our caller brought up James Brown, are there, examples from popular culture today that show that the issue of colorism isn't necessarily improving?
Absolutely. So in my book, I talk about, a number of things that have happened just since 2000 that show, particularly within popular culture, that colorism is around and it's alive and well, and that we have a long way to go. So if you think about, so I'll use music as an example. Hip-hop, particularly a lot of hip-hop music in the past 10 years or so, we've seen this really sort of pervasive messages within hip-hop culture that lighter skin is better. A really common term that African-Americans use to refer to someone with light skin is red. And so if you talk about someone as red, it's typically referred to someone who is a lighter skin tone. I know that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because red is not the same as black. But we hear a lot of hip-hop artists talk openly about red girls are better. Red girls are preferred. And I'm actually working on a project right now where I'm looking at the top rap songs, top 10 rap songs from each year from 2005 to 2015. And there is overwhelming evidence that the majority of these songs that are really, really popular talk about and sort of, value openly light-skinned women as better than dark-skinned women. Social media has also been really important in sort of conveying this message. And so even with on Twitter, there are a number of Twitter handles that people within the African-American community use to divide each other based upon their lightness and darkness of skin. So, for instance, the hashtags Team Light Skin and hashtag Team Dark Skin are really, very popular Twitter handles that Twitter users use to kind of separate and sort of reinforce this notion of colorism. So it's not something, I think I argue in my book very clearly that although there's definitely been progression, some really interesting things that have happened in the 21st century that have allowed and provided a platform for colorism to be manifest in a very different way compared to 50, 60 years ago. And social media and music are definitely two examples of that.
Yeah. Jeffrey Ann Wilder is the author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. And our next caller is Tony in Egg Harbor. Hi, Tony.
Yeah, hi, Joy, and hi, Professor Wilder. Great topic, as usual.
Good morning.
My hypothesis is that the reason why lighter seems to get more currency, and use that word a lot, Professor, and I really think it's appropriate in this conversation, is that it just goes back to some very elementary issues in our evolution, and that is lighter people get to stay indoors, and darker people are outdoors. And my theory is that it's really about trying to create the strongest offspring, and lighter people will do that. What's your feeling on that?
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. That's part of the history of colorism within within American society that, as I was mentioning before, slaves had different jobs. And so, as we know, racial mixing and intermarriage is not something that was neither valued or even lawful up until 1967. And so when you had, female slaves who were, having children with white plantation owners, not as a result of love relationships, but of course, we already know the history of that, that of course resulted in, offsprings who had mixed ancestry. And so because of what we know as the one drop rule, one drop of black ancestry makes you black, at least legally that was the case, then all blacks with varying skin tones and varying racial ancestry were considered black. And so they were all treated equally in the eyes of the law. However, there was differential treatment of those blacks, if they were lighter skin or darker skin, within their day-to-day lives. And so this classification of house slaves or field slaves is really the genesis for colorism within African-American, within American society.
We are talking about colorism, prejudice or discrimination based on skin tone, why darker-skinned people of color are perceived differently and treated differently than lighter-skinned people of color. We're talking about how colorism operates within the black community with our guest, who is the author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. Jeffrey Ann Wilder is also a sociologist, an associate professor of sociology at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, Florida. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to join in with a color story. Has colorism affected you or a loved one? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about colorism with Jeffrey Ann Wilder, and welcoming your questions about colorism and your experiences or stories about it, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Catherine in Racine is with us. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Professor Wilder. It's a privilege and a pleasure to speak to you two this morning.
Well, thank you for calling.
The reason why I call is because in my family, I'm Caucasian, and my family is primarily of white descent. We have, in the past few years, experienced colorism and racism within my family. And the reason I say that is because my cousin, who lives in California, he met this wonderful woman. She's a smart, a funny, very educated, and such a wonderful woman. And we didn't find out until he came to visit us that she was half Mexican, half African American. And for me, my mom and my dad and my brother, that didn't matter, because we were raised to judge someone on their morals, not on how they act as a person, not their skin. But my cousin's mom and his dad and his sister and that whole side of the family, they hated her from the get-go because she wasn't white.
Yeah.
And that's
racism. And what does colorism fit into this too, Catherine?
It does. I think so, because they did get married and they have a beautiful baby girl. And you would not guess from looking at her, because she looks just like my cousin. She's light as can be. You wouldn't think that she comes from a mixed race. And everybody on his side of the family, they love that little girl to pieces, but they still won't acknowledge his wife, her mother.
Oh, my goodness. A comment, Professor Wilder?
Yeah, this is very, very unfortunate, very sad stuff. But again, you know, all too common in communities of color. So same thing happens. And I'm so glad the caller brought up and sort of, you know, kind of understands the distinctions between racism and colorism here, because, you know, As I pointed out earlier, white folks are capable of perpetuating and reinforcing colorism too, a lot of times subconsciously, not necessarily knowing that while they're placing more value or feeling more comfortable with lighter skin, that's of course racism, but that's also colorism. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot of instances of people just feeling more comfortable around or with lighter skin folks. And when it comes to dating and marriage and children, it becomes really, really hard. And unfortunately, that's when you are really able to see how people really feel about issues, when people make decisions to marry and have children with people who are not necessarily a part of the race, or even within the race, people making decisions to marry someone who's a darker skin tone, and people not being comfortable with that, because the number one thing that people respond is, well, what about your children? So if you're a lighter skinned woman and or man, and you decide to have a darker skin mate, a lot of times people get backlash or resistance to that, because the question becomes, you know, if you're deciding to have children with someone who's darker skinned, then your children have the potential of being darker. And I think this is exactly what the caller is talking about, and I'm really glad that she brought that up.
I am too. Thank you very much for calling, Catherine. Let's go next to Mike in Abrams. Hello, Mike.
Hello. I have a question for your guest, and it doesn't turn things as simple as just lighter skin to darker skin, but you know, we have a perception of beauty, and I think it leans more towards, you know, European facial features. And you know, how does this kind of play into you know, discrimination with maybe people of various color having European features versus some of the traditional African features? If I had you know, two dark skinned women and one woman had really you know, African features, and one of the dark skinned women had European features, would I have what I would discriminate against, you know, the African-featured woman and consider the European-featured woman to be an exotic beauty? I just was wondering your
Does that play into this, Professor Wilder?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned before, colorism is more than about skin tone. It's about facial features. It's about hair texture. So, you know, the caller hit the nail on the head. The closer you are to white or light, the better. So, of course, we understand that within the context of skin tone. Also, facial features within the African-American community and communities broader, the more Eurocentric features you have. And you know, of course, we recognize that, you know, race is not real. It's a social construction, right? Phenotype, of course, is real, but this sort of notion of having, quote-unquote, black features or white features is essentially it's a biological fallacy, right? But given that, yes, if you have a sharper nose, you know, so I was told when I was growing up, and I never really, you know, I kind of thought my nose is too sharp or too keen, but a lot of people in my family and outside always make comments about my keen nose because it's more of a, it tends toward what we would think of as a Eurocentric facial feature, Eurocentric nose. So when it comes to, you know, lips, eyes, and we see lots of folks in a lot of Asian communities having eyelid surgery to make their eyes broader because there is this notion that if your eyes are too narrow, then that's not a good thing either. So that's also part and parcel of colorism as well in other communities of color. So absolutely. Hair. So if your hair is, if your natural hair is closer to white, meaning if it's straighter or wavier, if it has more of a straighter or wavy texture, it's valued, there is value, and within the black community that's known as good hair. If your hair tends toward more, quote-unquote, African sort of features or characteristics, being more kinky, coily, tightly curled, that's known of and thought about as quote-unquote bad hair. And so there's lots of discussion within the black community about that as well.
Fascinating. So do you think, or how will understanding about our attitudes about skin color or facial features change things personally or publicly?
I think it's really important because, you know, a lot of people don't recognize this issue as an issue. And so I think, you know, just an education awareness is really partly why I wrote the book, to really educate people about the history of colorism and sort of the contemporary manifestation, because if you know about it, then you're able to recognize it and hopefully address it within your personal life. And then, of course, once we know about it, once more people are able to recognize and understand how to articulate that and also challenge that within their personal lives, and ultimately, hopefully, that would start to impact things on a broader level, whether that's at a policy level. So, for instance, the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission established about 10 years ago an e-race initiative to really try to battle and thwart colorism, color-based discrimination within the hiring and workplace. So knowing about it on a personal level is really, really important. But then again, you see policies enacted that really, you know, try to make sure that people aren't discriminated against based upon their skin tone, not just race, but their skin tone when it comes to hiring. And so again, it becomes, as I mentioned earlier, this notion of colorism becomes sort of mapped on to a quality of life issue.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you have a question about colorism and its significance, or if you have a story to share about colorism affecting you or your family, we would like to hear from you. Jeff in Madison is with us. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Yeah, I completely agree with your guest. This is a worldwide phenomenon. I lived in West Africa for years and witnessed this constantly, a constant part of life in my classroom and all structures. But I also witnessed this in Thailand, which, interestingly, was never colonized. And when I asked a friend about this, I was told that historically darker-skinned peoples worked in the rice fields, or I should say people working in the rice fields became darker. Wealthier people didn't have to, and so they were, as a result, lighter-skinned, which, like everywhere else, became associated with wealth and success. And so, I mean, it's hard to pull these things apart, race, class, and all this. There it was a very class-based, or is, or was a class-based dynamic. But I'll listen off the air. Interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Some classism going on here, too?
Absolutely. And so the other piece, too, is that, you know, it's very commonplace, as the caller mentioned, is this sort of ideology that You know, the closer you are to white, the better it is for you class-wise. And so that's also part and parcel is why people encourage their family members to, you know, date and marry outside the race as to sort of improve their class standing as well. So class, color, race, they're all connected. Interestingly enough, earlier in January, there was an ad that was for a... I think a beauty company in Thailand that got a lot of sort of backlash because there was essentially a model in the ad, a Thai model, who essentially within the context of the ad, we see her sort of, there's two images of her. Her was very, very, the model has very, very pale skin, and then the model also, there's another image of the model with essentially charcoal black skin, so skin that no, very few people really have, but sort of this very extreme white and extreme dark sort of advertisement. And the hook for this ad was just being white, you will win. And so there are a lot of people who are really upset at this ad, and really the message within that is quite clear, quite blatant, that whiter is better. And this was in Thailand, and they actually pulled the ad. So colorism is definitely a global phenomenon. Yeah. Absolutely.
Thanks, Jeff. Let's go next to Felicia in Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning. I just had a quick question about how do we shield our children and maybe even talk to them and educate them about this issue? My daughter at 4 years old notices the differences in skin tones amongst her classmates, our family members, and, you know, it's not something, you know, she's been faced with directly at home, but she obviously is picking it up.
Mm-hmm. I have a four-year-old also, and that's a great question because my daughter also makes a distinction between not just color, pink face, brown face, but light brown face, dark brown face. And as someone who is studying colorism for 20 years and written a book on colorism, it was, you know, kind of a little bit frustrating or disappointing for me to recognize that even though I have, you know, equipped with all this knowledge, you know, that, you know, I was pretty much kind of powerless when trying to explain to my daughter that there is nothing wrong with her skin tone, which is very similar to mine. So I think it really becomes important for parents and educators in general to recognize to really have an awareness of colorism so as not to encourage difference within the group. So, of course, four-year-olds and preschoolers and children are going to see those differences because that's how they learn. You know, it's really just kind of part of their learning process and recognizing that people are different and they're not necessarily placing value on that. But it becomes up to us to recognize that while they're placing difference and recognizing differences within people, that they don't add value or take away value from those differences. So I think it's really important for parents and educators in general to be very intentional about how they talk about these skin tone differences with their children.
Yeah, we have just a minute to go. Dana on Facebook is saying, boy, why can't we think bigger picture and learn to appreciate all people for who they are? Why can't we overcome this silliness? Are you optimistic that we might be able to overcome colorism?
Yes, but I would disagree with the person on Facebook. It's not silly. I mean, listen, we live in a society where people lost their life, and it is Black History Month. So we are in a society where people have lost their life for their racial category, for being Black. So it's not silly. It's very real. And that's really important for us to know and to recognize. So to call it silly and to recognize it for really what it is a first step.
Thank you very much for being with us. Jeffrey Ann Wilder, sociologist and author of Color Stories, Black Women and Colorism in the 21st Century. She is also the founding director of the Institute for the Study of Race and Ethnic Relations at North Florida, University of North Florida in Jacksonville. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison for producing this program and to Bill Martins for on-air direction. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.